Welcome to episode 18 of Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I am Greg Weeks. I'm a political scientist at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, currently here on the completely empty campus of UNC Charlotte. And today I'm talking to Miguel Centellas, who is Croft Instructional Assistant Professor of Sociology at the University of Mississippi. Miguel, thanks for doing this.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Should note too, your PhD is political science. You are a political scientist, and that your research focuses on political institutions in new democracies, and you've done a ton of work on Bolivia. Now, Bolivia, of course, has been in the news recently because Evo Morales lost a referendum earlier this year that was intended to allow him to run for another presidential term, and he lost. But now political allies are talking about trying to figure out ways of doing it anyway. Now, that's not going to be just the center of what we're going to discuss, but, you know, want to get that in there because seems like Bolivia is at a, or at least is now or very soon will be at a important turning point. But let's just start, especially because you've done work on institutions. You've talked about how electoral reform has exacerbated political cleavages in the past in Bolivia. Can you explain how that works?
Sure. This was sort of the subject of my dissertation work quite a while ago. But in the mid-1990s, the government of Bolivia reformed its electoral system, and it introduced a German-style electoral system, which basically means that half of the legislature is now elected in single-member districts, just like we do in the United States for all of our seats in Congress. The other half, roughly, it's been fewer and fewer with different reforms, is still elected by list proportional electoral system. So the end result is relatively a sort of proportional representation system, but a number of candidates are now elected directly. And because you have a multi-party system, it's very easy to win with relatively small percentages of votes, sometimes as little as 20% of the vote when you had five or six candidates running against each other. So what I noticed early on was that parties began sort of nominating candidates who could sort of rally a particular base in districts. And many of these districts are rural districts. And you ended up getting a very highly polarized kind of electorate very early on. So small minorities, you know, 20, 25, maybe 30% of voters, if they were diehard committed to certain kinds of issues, often wrapped up around ethnic identity or regional identity, could win a lot of seats. And the parties began drifting away from being sort of national parties and becoming regional parties. And I believe that the evidence suggests that that kind of polarization and fragmentation of the party system led to the kind of crisis that allowed then the rise of MAS, which benefited from this, as well as the rise of the new opposition parties.
Now, in the reason I'd ask that is because, in historical perspective, Bolivia has been pretty amazingly stable, at least from the outside under Evo Morales. And I was curious about how much political institutions and even the electoral system help us understand that, or whether it's something else completely.
No, sure. Yeah, that was why I was interested in Bolivia to begin with, was that for all of its deficiencies, you know, one of the poorest countries in the hemisphere, no real history of democracy up until the 1980s, it remained much more stable than a lot of its neighbors, including countries like Argentina, which had a few coups every once in a while, or Colombia, which had tremendous amounts of violence, or Peru. And one of the things that became sort of a catch-22 as it went forward was Bolivia had this really unique system of electing presidents. So you had this multi-party system, and because of it, no candidate could ever win 50% of the vote. Candidates were coming in with 25, 30% at the top. But Congress then got together and elected the president from the top vote getters. What that meant was that the new Congress made sort of coalitions, the kind that you see in Europe. Right. So they would form together these multi-party coalitions and get to the majority, you know, 50% plus one of the seats in Congress. And that majority coalition would then pick the presidential candidate. What it meant was that presidents then had always enjoyed a majority support in the legislature, which means they could get their agenda passed. It also meant that those majorities were multi-party. So they did have to negotiate, but they negotiated with a number of other parties. Over time, that seems to have broken down because the same parties were constantly getting into coalitions, shutting out other sort of more leftist parties over time. And that led to this crisis, I think, in 2003 that then allowed Evo Morales to sort of emerge as the new president.
So, I mean, so there was kind of a parliamentary vibe, but if they had a majority, then what kind of pressure was it? Was it the pressure on the street, or rather, was it do they have unnatural majorities compared to the rest of the population? If that makes sense.
Sure. Well, they had natural majorities, so these were actually fairly large in terms of electoral support, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
The major parties would have, you know, if you put together all of their votes for a coalition, they would come to about 60% or so of the vote. You know, it varied from election to election. And in fact, over time, the coalitions got bigger and bigger to the point where they became super majority coalitions, right? So the last sort of big coalition was the one under President Bonsa in the late 90s, and that one achieved a two-thirds majority in the legislature in terms of its coalition power. After about a year, that broke down, right? So the real politics in Bolivia for a long time was really within the coalitions and the sort of negotiations that took place at the party leadership level, which were backed by the mandates, if you will, from their voters. So there was majority support for the parties in the coalitions. That kind of broke down a little bit in the 2002 election because of the weird dynamic between Evo Morales coming in second place and bringing such a large number of seats for his party, and it became very, very difficult for the new governing coalition to get to 50% plus one, and it had to kind of make some acrobatics to do that. But prior to that, all of these coalitions maintained tremendous electoral support. Of course, they were also checked by protests in the streets. So the street was always a way in which voters or citizens at least made their demands known. There's a long tradition of this in Latin America and more generally, but especially in Bolivia. And the parties then kind of responded to that, often with an eye to how this would play out in the next election.
And so in thinking about this, this whole arrangement, and then so things, you would get majorities, but then things would break down. How has that worked for understanding executive legislative relations during the Morales years? Because you had traditional, very strong regional differences, and so how has he managed to maintain that kind of a majority?
Right. So what has happened under Morales is that the sort of informal institutions are now played in a completely different set of rules, right? So formally, the electoral system continues to work the same way. The polarization is still there. But since the rise of Evo Morales, you have one, what we call, hegemonic political party. So the MAS by itself can generally get about 50% or more of the vote easily. It has usually gotten somewhere in the 55, 60 years, you know, almost 65% range. So they have a solid majority as a single party. Now, internally, that party is really a collection of factions, but they campaign as one party. So I'm going to think of them as one party. The opposition is less than 50%, but is also deeply divided. So it's not one opposition party. It's rather a series of opposition parties that, if they have a good check on the MAS, it's at the local level. Right, so the city of La Paz, for example, has a party that has been in power really, despite a name change, since about the time of Evo Morales. And they're in the opposition, and they will win in the city of La Paz handily. But they don't have any real support or real infrastructure as a party anywhere outside. In the department of Santa Cruz, you have a political party that has dominated since 2005. And they generally get just over 50% of the vote themselves. But they don't have any support outside of that department. So imagine, essentially, you have at the national level one major, big political party that gets a majority or slightly more than a majority at every election. And the opponents to that party are fragmented in such a way that they can be sort of gobbled up at the national level when it comes to policy issues, because they don't coordinate. At the local level, they can control their own local affairs, but of course within a sort of centralized type of state, you know, they always are dominated by the central government.
Yeah, you know, it's, I think an interesting thing to study too would be the weakness of the opposition in a number of countries with leftist governments, because the Venezuelan opposition is famously fragmented. You talk about Daniel Ortega kind of gobbling up power in Nicaragua. Well, the opposition there is either co-opted or fragmented. And it's always sort of, again, I'm no Bolivianist, but I felt like toward the beginning of Evo Morales's presidency, the opposition seemed very vocal and very like an actual opposition. And for years now, you barely hear about anything.
That's right. And I think co-opted is a good term for that. Some of them have been kind of bullied, right? So in the city of La Paz, which is where the capital is, an opposition party dominates the mayoralty there. And in the most recent election, which was somewhat of a surprise, a different opposition party won in the city of El Alto, right? So the two cities, the metropolitan area of the capital, are controlled by the opposition, but they're kind of subdued, if you will, through what we call bullying. In the Department of Santa Cruz, on the other hand, what has really happened is MAS campaigns sort of against the parties there, but then it gives them a lot of free rein within limits to do what they want, as long as they don't rock the boat at the national level. So there's a bit of co-option there, including, you know, there are a lot of candidacies that have been actively recruited by Evo Morales, who kind of micromanages those things at the party level, and very often specifically finding figures of the regional autonomy movement, specifically wanting blonde, blue-eyed candidates to run in specific districts in order to kind of pry away at that sentiment in Santa Cruz. And of course, part of the problem with the reason that the opposition is so fragmented is they want different things, right? So while they may oppose the MAS, their disagreements between, say, the middle class elites in La Paz and sort of the middle class entrepreneur business class in Santa Cruz are also deeply divisive between them. In many ways, understanding Bolivia or perhaps some of the other countries in the region today is like a flip side of the 1980s, right? In the 1980s, the left was fragmented into 7, 8, 9, 10 different little parties, you know, more busy fighting with each other about the nuances of Trotskyism versus Leninism versus what have you. And here you have the same thing where you have essentially liberal parties in the sort of European term fighting over neoliberalism versus, you know, cultural liberalism versus these other kinds of nuances within the liberal camp.
One thing, too, that just popped into my head because you had mentioned it earlier is that – so we're talking about all of this political schisms and the lack of a history of democracy in Bolivia. The other thing that's disappeared is the military. So is the military hovering around, or is the military just now completely in the background?
Yeah, I'm a little less clear on that because that's very opaque, and I don't have a lot of deep contacts in the military.
No, I'm just curious.
Sure, no, but it does seem that the military has remained essentially apolitical throughout the whole process. And that's been a really interesting thing. So even the crisis in 2003, the military stayed loyal to the head of state, Gonzalo Sánchez de Lozada, and until he resigned. I mean, they sort of sent a signal saying, you know, we don't feel comfortable with this kind of repression anymore, and began essentially stepping down. But they didn't act against him. They defended him when there was a police mutiny earlier that year. And even though there was deep animosity towards Evo Morales, they have not made any sense of even hints of a possible coup. You know, he's been giving them money and resources, of course, but they're also not heavily involved in kind of public works projects the way they are in Venezuela. It seems to have maintained a sort of professional, just obey the commander-in-chief and stay the course.
Actually, I think that alone is a pretty remarkable achievement, no matter what
Absolutely.
Else Evo Morales or others have done, is that when you look at Bolivia's history of coups, the stability now is just remarkable.
That's right. I mean, Bolivia has not had a military coup now since 1982,
83? Yeah, 82.
82, I think. Yeah.
Okay, so coming back to Evo Morales, one question that you had said too was important to get at is how much does the MAS exist without him? Now this gets to the question of being running for president again. I mean, are there other candidates that are coming up through in a traditional party structure, or is it highly personalized?
It's highly personalized. It's very difficult to really argue against that anymore. Now, there's a dilemma here because one could make the argument that he should be able to run for as many times as he wants and let voters decide. There's, of course, the practical issue of, the advantages of incumbency and all of that. But the real problem is there does not seem to be anybody else within MAS that is able to not just challenge Evo Morales, but in fact take over for him, which could be a real problem if he were to suddenly die. And the people within the MAS themselves have argued that, well, there's these factions sort of dividing MAS over various issues, it's particularly, say, for example, indigenous groups who want more environmental concerns and ethnic identity issues versus the traditional miners who don't really care much about the environment with strip mining and things and are more interested in sort of the old 1950s developmentalist model. And he balances that out. So if there's no one else that can balance it out, that's a problem for the MAS. At some point in the future, there'll be a crisis. The other issue is as people have risen through the ranks and become possible presidential candidates, they often either suddenly fall into scandals that then lose their position within the party, or, and usually after a scandal, they then move into the opposition.
Okay, but yeah, and you said too, I mean, that, you know, maybe he could have the right to run for many times as he want if people want him. But unless I'm totally misremembering, the referendum lost, right?
That's right.
People
yeah,
said no, so Bolivian people have said, okay, really no, we would prefer that we have some sort of change.
Sure. So the referendum was specifically a referendum to amend the constitution to allow him to run for another term. Although this is his third term, he has argued successfully, and the courts have backed him, and he controls the courts, that he's only really had two terms because his first term didn't count because right. He was elected under the old constitution. So this is a referendum to make one single amendment to the constitution, which was to allow him to run for a third term, not indefinite terms, a third term.
Yeah.
And it lost. Now they're arguing that a referendum is not permanent, and therefore they can put the referendum either again to voters or simply amend the Constitution using the traditional means, which is through the legislature. And, of course, he has the votes in the legislature, so he could amend the Constitution again to run for re-election. So the real issue is, you know, what does this mean for respect for voters and all of that? For me, the real interesting question is if he runs again, he might lose. His popularity has taken some hits recently. There have been a number of scandals. There have been a number of missteps. The water crisis in Bolivia, which is really, really, really problematic. You know, does he want to really risk his legacy by running and losing?
Yeah. And okay, so this actually brought up a couple of questions in my head. One that I thought, too, was that commodity prices are dropping, so this is actually an opportune time for him to leave.
Right.
Because whoever is going to be president in the next several years is going to face contraction. But I also wanted to ask you, speculatively, do you have a sense of what Bolivians think? Do people feel, no matter how they voted, do they feel passionately that he shouldn't? Or would people say, well, okay, that's kind of how it goes?
Well, the public opinion polling, which is pretty spotty in Bolivia, and it tends to dominate the cities, which are more opposition-leaning, so you got to always read them with a grain of salt. But it seems that solid majorities, somewhere in the 60% range, expect him to respect the referendum.
Okay.
And now whether they're going to go out to the streets to protest or not is a different question. But there does seem to be pushback from a number of sectors. And it's quite possible that the only reason he has been renominated, so to speak, in this conference that Mas had, they had a congress, and they decided that Evo Morales would once again be their candidate. But that came on the heels of several big groups within the Mas coalition actively withdrawing from it. So how that plays out, I don't know. So his base is now much more pro-Evo than before, because it's now primarily made up of cocaleros and a few sort of allied groups in the rural countryside. The miners are essentially ready to walk out, and some of them already have, and some of the Altiplano indigenous communities have already walked away from him. So that could change the electoral landscape, but who knows?
And the other question that made me think of was, you said, well, maybe he could lose. How do you feel about the quality of the elections that would a loss happen, in other words?
Sure. From what I can tell, the electoral court is still pretty technically savvy, and I think I respect their work. So the problem is not in fraud at that level. The problem is how votes are counted at the precinct level. There are a number of precincts in the rural countryside that often, and this is historically, you know, even before Evo Morales, will come in at near 100% for one party. Lately, it's been for Mas. Now, part of that is sort of a culture of a rural community sort of sitting together, figuring out who they want to vote for, and then they kind of do that together by consensus. So if he can buy out, so to speak, all these rural areas that are overrepresented electorally, then they could continue to win. The other thing that has happened is there used to be a requirement that at every precinct level, there had to be the opportunity for a member of every political party to sit at the table and watch as the votes were being counted. And as they were being cast. So to sort of monitor at the party level. A number of reforms have sort of eliminated a lot of the rights of parties to do that. So now they're sort of done, kind of like by jury duty. People are randomly, you know, recruited, through a jury selection process to sit at those tables. Which means that opposition parties don't have the right to say, well, we demand to sit at the table and make sure that people are voting the way they say that they're voting.
Okay. Well, Miguel, we're out of time, but I did want to give you the opportunity to plug your study
abroad. Sure.
Because you pretty routinely take students to Bolivia, isn't that right?
Yeah, just about every year, and we hope to do it again this summer. So we're getting the application process for that. It's a two course sort of integrated course model. One is politics and culture of the Andes. My wife co-teaches it. She's an anthropologist, so we sort of cover the qualitative, quantitative kind of different perspectives. And then the other one is a research methods component. So I teach the statistics and more quantitative parts of it, and she teaches the, you know, ethnography and participant observation components for that.
Okay, and so when's that? What are all your dates and deadlines and whatnot?
Sure. We don't have the specific dates yet, but it'll probably be in July.
Okay.
We have to pair it up with another program that we run, which is a language program. So that's usually in June, usually the whole month of June, give or take 4 weeks. And then immediately afterwards starts up the other program, also 4 weeks. And people can take both, or they can just take the methods, or they can just do the language component. And it's all done in La Paz, at the Catholic University in La Paz.
All right. Awesome. Well, again, Miguel Centellas is Croft Instructional Assistant Professor of Sociology at the University of Mississippi. Thank you again so much.
Oh, thank you for having me again.